FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yes, hello, this is the FWA podcast from William Hill. Every week we talk to one of the leading football writers in the country, and this week, no exception, we've got John Richardson, the chief football correspondent from the Sunday Express with us. How are you doing, John? You well?
I'm well, Lee, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, very good, thank you. I love midweek Premier League action.
Oh, yeah.
So plenty to talk about. We're going to have a little look back at the midweek games, and then we'll have a chat about the state of refereeing with Andre Mariner in mind, of course. Then we'll look forward to the weekend's football and the top flight. First sign of nerves from Liverpool midweek. It was Wenger's second millennium of games started by further exposing Arsenal's lack of strength in character, I guess. And Man City's supremacy over Manchester United even had David Moyes looking longingly 5 miles east. John, interesting midweek, wasn't it? Five games and lots to talk about.
I mean, we turn up at Anfield expecting Liverpool to score off four or five these days, don't you? But it was very edgy. But in the end, the win was so vital. You know, you've seen titles won or lost on nights like that, Lee, haven't you? Where Liverpool expected to score goals. They don't. They're not so prolific. But they get there in the end. And the 3 points, I mean, the Cop knew. It was relief all round. But what an important 3 points. Whereas Manchester City, I mean, they'd gone to Manchester United and just wiped the floor with them. They were absolutely superb. They're scoring goals for fun again. I mean, the goals had drained a little bit, haven't they, in the last few weeks. But they're back in form. And Arsenal, I'm afraid, for me, they're out of it now.
Yeah. Just on Liverpool, first of all. I mean, it was interesting hearing all the build-up to the match and Steven Gerrard talk afterwards. People, I follow the guy who does the match announcements at Anfield. He said, like, it felt like a Champions League day. It felt like a really big event at Anfield on Wednesday night. And Steven Gerrard said, even driving in and on the coach into the stadium, it felt different.
Yeah.
The fans are suddenly starting to believe. And this is the test, though, isn't it? This is where, so long Liverpool this season have been the team who everyone's kind of going, oh yeah, they're doing so well, they're overachieving. Now suddenly the pressure's just creeping on them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for the last few months it's been a free hit for Liverpool. Nobody expected to be up there. They weren't in the Champions League. They've just gone along nicely. They were scoring goals for fun. Suddenly, you know, they're beating Arsenal, they're thrashing Arsenal 5-1. And then suddenly belief started, you know, and the old players are saying, oh, maybe this could be the season. So I think that last night was certainly the night when they had to deliver. And for, you know, the Kop were there, the Kop were behind them. It was a fantastic atmosphere. And it was, as we said, it was a real edgy night. But, you know, I've seen Liverpool teams in the past in the 70s and 80s where they've played badly and they've won. And that's how you win leagues. And now, you know, everybody's saying, well, Liverpool can suddenly do it. I mean, I think they're the second favourites now, aren't they? So the pressure is on. And the pressure's on especially people like Steven Gerrard. I mean, Steven Gerrard has been a fantastic servant for Liverpool. He's lifted the Champions League. But, of course, he hasn't lifted the Premier League title. And what a way, you know, to bow out of his career. I mean, he's only possibly got another couple of seasons. But if he can lift that trophy come May, that'd be fantastic for him. And suddenly the pressure's on. And the Liverpool fans are thinking, can this be the season?
Back to Manchester United. We've talked long and hard about them in this podcast. Well, every newspaper, every TV, every radio station's talked about them long and hard. I saw an article this week talking about Moyes not getting Manchester United. What do you think he should say? Things like, you know, Fergie would never have come out and said, that's what we aspire to, Manchester City, just because it's Manchester City. Now, Moyes is an honest guy. He tells it how it is. Do you think he should be saying those sort of things? Do you think he's a little bit weak in terms of the way he approaches the media?
You can't knock him for answering questions.
No.
You know, I mean, Alex Ferguson quite often would say, I'm not getting into that. You know, when it was a pressure question.
Oh, you're banned.
You're banned, yeah. Yeah, a number of us know that. The old hairdryer.
Yeah.
But Moyes has been very honest. Now, at times, you might think being honest is being naive. And at times, maybe has been. But as a journalist, I never knock anybody for answering questions very honestly. Now, myself, you know, I watched Manchester United like we all did last season. They won the league by 11 points. Now, they suddenly haven't gone from winning the league to being seventh you know, without something being wrong, and the finger has to point at the manager. The manager at times, for me, has looked out of depth, out of his depth. Now, I'm sure if he could have the time again, he would start again, because he's done things wrong.
Yeah.
You know, his selections haven't been right. I think one of the things he did wrong right at the beginning, he didn't have his scouting team around him. You know, he's slowly but surely, a lot of people wouldn't have noticed this, but he's brought people in from Everton during the season. Now, I think he should have had those people in place last summer, because it was a very important transfer window, and one in which they fouled up. Him and Ed Woodward made a right mess of the transfer window in the summer. You know, they tried to get Cesc Fabregas. Now, I know for a fact, if they'd gone in with 50 million for Cesc Fabregas at Barcelona, they would have got him. And also, his scouts, you know, were advising this and advising that, but they weren't his scouts at that time. And I think that's set the field a little bit, that a poor summer transfer window sort of set up the season.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the odds for the title now: Manchester City 10-11, so odds on to win the title with those two games in hand. Chelsea 5-2, Liverpool 11-4 here at William Hill, and Arsenal 125-1. As John was saying, they're out of it. Referees, John, Andrea Mariner's case of mistaken identity sits on the same shelf for me as Graham Poole's three yellow cards and Pedro Mendes' goal that never was against Man United. Yeah. In that there are rare occurrences. Having said that, though, the Pedro Mendes one, you could argue that was one of the goals that kind of would be credited as being the first real kind of the first real climb towards goal line technology.
Yeah, the giveaway now, there was the scene, the net balls, wasn't it?
That was it. Yeah, well, I mean, and there were others. I mean, you know, balls crossing the line, not giving as goals, are far more common than a referee sending the wrong player off.
I was at Chelsea on Saturday, Lee, and you know, Andrea Mariner and his men, they're having a right nightmare. They obviously didn't know what had happened at first. You know, he'd signalled the corner. Obviously, you know, the Chelsea players were in his face, and he's desperately on the walkie-talkie trying to find out what's happening. Now, within 10 seconds, I'm sat at my desk watching the replay, knowing exactly what's happened.
Mm.
So why can't the fourth official, instead of being harangued continually by managers, why can't he be sat, you know, in the stand, in front of a screen? Now, they're all wired up. And within 10 seconds, you know, there doesn't have to be any break in the play. Okay, he might have made a mistake and pointed for a corner. But suddenly, the fourth official watching this screen can suddenly say, by the way, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has handled the ball. It's a penalty, whatever. He's the man who should be sent off. So within then 30 seconds, you've got the right decision, haven't you?
Mm, yeah.
It's simple. Mm. But for some reason, you know, okay, we've got... you know, the ball over the line, that technology, we need more. Let's get the right decisions.
Yeah. What's your view been of the goal line technology? I mean, it's not really... The worry about technology is that it slows the pace of the game down, it changes our game, you know, irreversibly. We haven't got the things to chat about as we did have before.
Yeah.
It's not really made any difference, has it, John? When we see it, I love what on Match Today, it's like when it comes on, it's like, oh, brilliant, here's one.
Yeah, well, but the thing is that you want the right decision.
Yes, yeah.
Especially, I mean, you know, we won the 1966... Well, England won the 1966 World Cup through a dodgy decision, didn't they, against Germany. Maybe if goal line technology was in existence then, the ball, you know, the Russian linesman might have been wrong.
Mm.
But I just want the right decision. And I think within seconds, you know, that decision can be given there. And obviously now the referees have this extra watch, don't they? And it tells you whether the ball's over the line or not. And that's fantastic. Okay, you don't want every decision. You don't want it slowed down like you see cricket and rugby union. But you do want the right decisions. And within seconds, those decisions via the fourth official can be relayed to the referee.
Yeah, indeed. Do you think he should have been given a game this weekend, Andrea Mariner? He's got Southampton, Newcastle, hasn't he?
No, I accept people make mistakes. We all make mistakes. But I didn't like Mariner's arrogance on Saturday because Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain obviously said to him, look, it was me that handled, not Kieran Gibbs. But he didn't reverse his decision. He didn't call back Kieran Gibbs. Now, for me, Mariner should have called him back, held his hands up, made the wrong decision. Fine, everybody gets on with it. But I thought it was a little bit arrogant that he ignored, you know, that advice from Oxlade-Chamberlain. He's very honest. You can lip read him, you know, on Match of the Day there. He's obviously saying look, it was me, ref. But he continued to ignore that. Mm. So I think then he should have been punished.
Yeah, yeah, it's a fair shout. I mean, there's no markets on yet on the Southampton-Newcastle game in terms of bookings, but there will be at some point. You wonder if it might go one of two ways if you can have a bet on it. He might keep his cards firmly in his pocket.
Or not. It's going to be a real test for him because obviously, you know, there's going to be a bit of banter from the crowd and quite right, that's what football's all about. I do think Andre Mannarin is a very good referee, but that's why I was very surprised on Saturday that he didn't listen to Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who, as we know, is a good lad, you know, he's an England player, he's a very honest lad. He went up to him, said, look, it was me, but he continued to ignore him.
Interestingly enough, that game obviously showed that red card. He showed a red card in Norwich v Stoke a couple of last time he refereed a Premier League game as well. Not usually that card happy, Andre Mariner, you know, but he has showed a fair few reds. Going back to the start of the year, he showed two red cards in the South Yorkshire derby between Sheffield Wednesday and Barnsley. Showed a red in the Man City game when they beat them 5-1 at Tottenham. A red in the Sheffield United Fulham FA Cup tie as well. So yeah, could be a nervy game for him, Southampton Newcastle one, just from a betting point of view. He might be looking at going overs on the bookings points.
I think maybe there will be a red card because he would be under so much pressure not to give anything, if you know what I mean, that he might go the other way. But it's a hard job, isn't it? Nobody would want to be an official these days, especially going on about TV replays. But they do show, you know, whether you've had a good game where you've had a, you know, horrendous game.
Yeah, and as the cliche goes, you know, players make far more mistakes in a game than a referee does and his team. The weekend, John, straight back into the Premier League action. Manchester United versus Aston Villa kicks it all off at 12:45.
That is a big one. Yeah. I was originally doing Arsenal and Manchester City for obvious reasons. You know, it's a bit of a title changer. But I'm now switching to Manchester United and Aston Villa because I think there's huge pressure now on David Moyes. As you know, they've lost six league games, haven't they, already at home this season. I don't think Moyes and his men can afford to lose again against Aston Villa.
Right.
You know, I know Bayern Munich's coming up and lots of people say that's more important, and in many ways it is. But I think this could be a litmus test on Saturday, because if the Stretford end turns against David Moyes, say if United lose against Aston Villa, the Glazers, you know, the owners of Manchester United, will come under severe pressure. I know at the moment they're still continuing to give David Moyes their 100% backing. You know, there's plans afoot, of course, in the summer for a big transfer foray. But I think the litmus test is the crowd. And I don't think the crowd will put up with another defeat, especially against a middle-of-the-table side like Villa.
No, and a team that Man United traditionally batter. You know,
they do.
Home and away, they won 3-0 there last season, 3-0 at home. Incidentally, and a bit of a quirky one, this one, just looking back through all the Manchester United-Aston Villa head-to-heads, Welbeck got 2 in a 3-0 win in December. Van Persie got a hat-trick in a 3-0 win last April. Hernandez scored 2. That's true. Hernandez scored 2 in a 3-2 win at Villa the year before. Rooney got a brace. Rooney got a brace before that. One of the United players always seems to get a couple in this game.
Brendan Maceda as well, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yeah,
scoring exactly. That last minute goal. Yeah.
But Villa have proved to be a decent away team. You know, that counter attacking style.
They're a very good counter attacking side. They've got pace to burn, haven't they? You know, and I think Fabian Delph, you know, the midfielder, is in fantastic form at the moment. Agbonlahor can always do damage. Benteke, of course. I think it's a severe test for Manchester United.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you say, they have got a fantastic record known against Villa. But I think Villa will be up for it. You know, they've got nothing to lose. I think they'll go for it. Manchester United will be nervy. Huge test for David Moyes.
If they were to lose this game, John, David Moyes is 6-1 to be the ninth Premier League manager to lose his job this season. Would it? I mean, you're saying there would be a lot of pressure on him. That much pressure?
Yeah, huge pressure. I mean, right. they wouldn't sack him
before the end of the season. There's no
before
point.
Before the end of the season.
Before Bayern Munich either.
No. But I think, let's be fair, nobody can see them getting past Bayern Munich. So you lose against Villa, you don't do very well on the home leg against Bayern Munich and go out the following week. That is pressure, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, a trip to St James's Park in between the two Bayern Munich games as well. So, I mean, no, you know, the cliche again is no easy games and all that. But
it's a horrendous season for Manchester United. Simple as that.
Traditionally, you know, from being a kid, I've never been a Man United fan. I'm more of a neutral now, kind of, you know, working, doing things around the Premier League. But I've got a real sense of. I feel sorry for David Moyes. I just wonder what it's like sat quietly in his office, John, you know, on a Wednesday afternoon. You know, when you've got one in your life, when you have a heap of problems on your shoulders and you just feel like, you know, a bit like, oh, I just need to get some rid of it. He must just feel like that all the time.
Well, I think that he's, at times he's embarrassed. You know, you can see him, you know, when he makes that walk, because of course you have to walk towards the Stretford end and down the tunnel, don't you? And after losing 3-0 at home against Liverpool, then 3-0 at home against Manchester City, making that walk, it's like walking the plank.
Yeah, it really is, yeah. Yeah. The other games this weekend, we mentioned in passing Arsenal and Man City. I mean, really now, that just should
Well,
be...
Well, Arsenal are out of it.
Yeah.
There's no way Arsenal in it, but it'd still be a tough game for Manchester City, because Arsenal have got a lot to prove this weekend after, you know, horrendous showing against Chelsea. I mean, you know, we've talked about the Andre Mariner incident, but Arsenal were dead and buried before that happened. They were 2-0 down, weren't they, in the opening 10 minutes?
Yeah.
You know, I've seen them lose at Liverpool. You know, they were thrashed there. I've seen them lose at Manchester City. I better stay away from watching Arsenal for Arsenal fans. But they're certainly not, for me, they're not title contenders. You know, I think they've been flat track bullies in many respects this season, because they haven't delivered against the big teams.
Yeah, fair. The Sunday game is Liverpool-Tottenham, another cracker for Liverpool title challenge and for Tottenham's top four aspirations. Monday night, Sunderland versus West Ham. We've talked about the top. Top
game.
Of the table. What about the bottom then? I mean, the teams who are in bother still, technically, Stoke versus Hull on 3 o'clock on Saturday. Got Swansea Norwich at 3 o'clock on Saturday. West Brom Cardiff 3 o'clock Saturday. Crystal Palace at home to Chelsea, which they'll do well to get anything out of. And then obviously Fulham playing Everton. This one's that's a 1:30 game on Sunday as well. And Sunderland West Ham. People are getting dragged back into this again. I mean, you know, it looked like Sunderland were just getting a bit of a crest of a wave, or maybe just getting some confidence. And those games in hand look a bit like an albatross around the neck.
Well, they do. I mean, this is a game they must win, because this is their last game in hand, isn't it, against, certainly the two teams ahead of them.
Yeah, Palace and West Brom. That's right, yeah.
You know, you would expect them to win, but they played really well last night at Liverpool. And you would expect them to win, but so many times they've turned up the stadium light and haven't delivered. Mm. And I can't understand that, because, you know, they've had good runs in the cups, both cups, haven't they? You know, under Gus Poyet, I think Gus Poyet is a good young manager. I think he's the right manager for Sunderland. But it's up to the players now to deliver. You know, time is running out for them. A friend of mine is a big Sunderland fan, and a few weeks ago I said, you'll be all right, you'll be about 10 points ahead of the bottom three. Well, obviously, I'm not very good at predictions, and they are very much in trouble.
Yeah. The remaining home games are, they've got it all in their hands. They're winnable. West Ham, winnable. Yeah. Everton, that's a hard game. Cardiff, should be winnable. West Brom and Swansea. I mean, four of those five.
I agree with you, Lee. I think that they can win four of those five games.
You'd want 10 points out of those 15, wouldn't you?
And that will be... Probably, well, no, 25. You probably need 38 points to be certain. The away run is terrible.
Yeah, Tottenham, Man City, Chelsea, Man United. Yeah.
So it's got to be one at the stadium light. And what you can't understand again is that, you know, there'll probably be, I don't know, 43,000-45,000 there on Monday night, you know, roaring them on. So they have fantastic backing, but too often the players have let the fans down.
Mm. Do you agree with the bookmakers in that Fulham and Cardiff are down?
They're I do. You never say it's definite, but I think Fulham have got too much to make up for. Cardiff, I don't know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, has he been the right appointment? Well, if they go down, obviously not. They can score goals, but as we saw against Liverpool, they concede too many.
Yeah.
So I would agree with the bookies. I would think Cardiff and Fulham on one other.
Yeah, who is it then? You knew I was going to ask you that. I'm going to give you the odds while you think about that. Sunderland are odds on as well. They're 10 to 11. Palace are 11 to 10. West Brom 100 to 30. Norwich 4 to 1. Swansea 9 to 1. And then
I'm going to go for West Brom.
Right, yeah.
I'll tell you why. I think that Tony Pulis is a fantastic manager.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was the right appointment. Pepe Mel, not so much. I mean, he's got a lot to learn. Swansea are in trouble as well.
I think
Norwich will just do enough. For me, it would be between Swansea, West Brom and Palace, and I'd go for West Brom, I'm afraid.
Yeah, West
for
Brom.
For Baggies fans.
West Brom's final games are Cardiff at home, Norwich away, Tottenham at home, Man City away, West Ham at home, Arsenal away, Sunderland away and Stoke at home last season.
Well, again, it's doable. As we said with Sunderland, it's doable, isn't it? But it's whether they can or not.
Well, I mean, and I always look at this time of the season, you know, when people are weighing up who's going to go up, who's going to stay up and who's going to go down. I always look at how many games the team has won. You know, they've won five games
from 30. Right.
Why are they going to win another three in the last, you know, in the last few? I mean, it Absolutely. Doesn't make any sense, does it?
I'll tell you what, though.
Form doesn't change.
I think it's been one of the greatest seasons for me, you know, because we don't know who's going to win the Premier League, do we? You know, nobody can certainly say that. And also, you know, it's been like, for the last few weeks, the bottom 10, hasn't it?
Yes.
You know, trying to stay up. It's fantastic. It's been a fantastic season.
Yeah, Sunderland on 25 points. So, you mean, you know, there's 5 points now to Swansea, but the way the season's come out as well is that Swansea have played 31, Sunderland got two games in hand on them, so we're still not sure at this stage. You're having to weigh up the games in hand and whether it's better to have points on the board, as Mourinho would say not. But I think when you're down at the bottom, it's
I would rather have the points on the board, definitely.
Yeah, without a doubt, We ask your colleagues every week for a better of the week, John. What result stands out to you? What's cast iron?
I mean, I've just been bullying up Tony Pulis here, but I think Chelsea will win easily at Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
I think it'll be two or three goals. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Palace will obviously have easier games than Chelsea. Chelsea in form. Jose Mourinho's got the bit between his teeth. He keeps on telling people they're not going to win the league, but deep down, of course, he thinks they can. So I would say an easy Chelsea win at Selhurst Park.
You're thinking like a couple of goals, maybe three?
Yeah, I'd go for 0-3.
Oh, right, okay. 3-0 itself is 8-1.
Right.
Because Chelsea to win, just full stop, is 4-11, which is,
I could imagine,
is pretty short. A couple of other ways in, though. If you think there's going to be goals, chances are that Eden Hazard will be involved in scoring them. For Eden Hazard to score any time in the game and Chelsea to win the game, that's 2-1.
He's been on fire, hasn't he, this season?
He's been fabulous, hasn't he?
Yeah,
all season long. And just Chelsea to win by two or more goals, so it could be 2-0, it could be or above, or 3-1, or that's 23-20, which is just
to see the odds for Man United Aston Villa, Lee. What's this?
I was looking at these earlier on. Man United are at 2-5.
Are they?
Which is very short. 7-2 the draw and 7-1 for Aston Villa.
7-1 Villa.
I know, yeah.
That's not bad.
An early goal and those odds will change. An early goal for Villa, I mean, and those odds.
Absolutely.
It wouldn't be a massive surprise.
I think that's very generous.
Yeah. Benteke's back in the goals, isn't he? And you know, like you said, with his pace and Bonlehor's pace.
Yeah.
Yeah. 7-2. I think.
And also, you know, as we said earlier, you're facing a very nervous Manchester United and also a very nervous crowd.
Yes. Yeah. And it could be a quiet crowd with that early kickoff as well.
That's a very good point, actually.
A few more things for David Moyes to worry about between between now and John, thanks for your time today. It's been really enjoyable chatting to you.
Enjoyed it, Lee. Thank you very much indeed.
John Richardson, the chief football correspondent from the Sunday Express. The FWA podcast is available at the Football Writers website. It's footballwriters.co.uk, williamhill.com/podcasts. You can also check out all our podcasts on our Audio Boo page or subscribe to them on iTunes. So we're back next week with another one of John's colleagues from the football writing world. In the meantime, if you're having a bet on any of the markets we've discussed, very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.